dindily dong, come on.
I don't believe it.
You missed that.
Miller, lovely cushion header. But Gerrard! Oh, you beauty! What a head shot! What a head!
Remember the name, Wayne Rooney.
It's Torres to get Chelsea a place in the Champions League final. The headline has been written.
Unbelievable!
Look at this, Kevin. It's a brilliant run from Messi. Can he go all the way?
They think it's all over. It is now.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to Talk from the Terraces with Adam and Kyle. Back again after FA Cup weekend. The league is back next weekend. Kyle, are you happy?
Buzzing. I cannot wait. But it was a good FA Cup weekend. I just couldn't finish my sentence there. It was actually a really good weekend, in all fairness, in terms of results. A couple of shocks here and there. We'll get into them, shall we?
Yeah, definitely. I think the most obvious one is probably the biggest scalping. Sutton United taking Leeds United out of the cup 1-0, penalty from the captain.
Yeah.
Thought Sutton United probably deserved to be a bit more comfortable than 1-0 from watching the highlights, in all honesty.
Yeah, I didn't watch the highlights myself personally. I just saw the result and I saw that the manager vapes. Which was weird. It just puts into perspective though, the difference in standard. Obviously, I've mentioned hundreds of times already that my local team is Wrexham, or my local team, and they play in a conference, and you do see some teams come and they're just they even think Wrexham's a big professional club, because like you probably saw their stadium yesterday. It's pretty much a field with some small terraces around it, literally, and then you have Ellen Road, which is obviously Leeds' ground. It just really puts into perspective. But you know, it's amazing to see. We mentioned, I think, was it the first podcast or second podcast we did with the FA Cup, and we were talking about the big teams don't really try for it anymore. But this is the other end of the spectrum that you just got to think it does add to it gives these teams more of a chance to get further into the cups, and it does them the world of good.
Definitely, it's massive for teams like Sutton and obviously Lincoln City, who went through as well. But this is why I think it would be a better idea that the clubs that are in the lower divisions maybe go through all the qualifying that they have to, but they automatically get put in the third round where they can draw the bigger sides to give them that better chance of potentially getting a bit more money from gates. I know that sounds a little bit silly, but the clubs need the money more than the big clubs. So I think it's a little bit unfair that they play about 8 rounds just to get into the first round almost. It's absolutely mental how many games they have to play before they even get to the first round proper. But Sutton United is obviously the fairy tale of this season, along with Lincoln City. But there were some other big shocks as well. Wolves beating Liverpool. Obviously, like I mentioned, Lincoln beating Brighton, which I think was a massive result considering how well Brighton are going this season. I don't know what sort of team they put out, but fair play to Lincoln. I think their manager used to be a PE teacher at some point, not even too long ago.
Yeah, going over that result with Lincoln, again, it's another massive result for them. They're gunning to get back into the league and things after, I think it's a 7 or 8 year absence, maybe even a little bit more. To sort of answer it, they're in the fifth round. They've probably made about £2 million, maybe even a little bit more, just from playing, the first round, second round, then obviously getting the big team in the third and then now in the fourth round as well. To be put in the hat for a fifth round, it's I was talking to my mate, who in fact is a Lincoln City fan, and he lives in Lincoln and things. He's not a massive Lincoln City fan, but he's from the area. But he wants to have he'd rather have a Sutton to try and get further in the cup. I mean, for example, I don't know, who's a conference team around Nottingham area? Is there one?
Alfreton.
Alfreton.
Where Forest play their under-23s games.
Okay. Say, for example, you're an Alfreton fan and you got as far as Lincoln or Sutton having the cup. What would you rather? Would you rather a big team away from home? Because in my opinion, I'd rather have like a United or like an Arsenal or something like that away from home, with the chance to get them in like as a replay or something like that. I mean, what's your thoughts on it?
I think I'm in agreement with you, really, because there's probably not many opportunities that those supporters will get to go to those grounds as to follow their team, if you know what I mean. No, that's no offence to like anyone like Lincoln or Sutton, because maybe 50 years down the line, or even maybe even less than that, they could get in the Premier League. Stranger things have happened in football, but you don't know. But realistically, it could be the one chance to play a big club like Arsenal, Man City, or Tottenham, or United, whoever's left in the FA Cup from the Premier League. I think I'd rather have the day out than play someone that you'd be playing potentially like next weekend in the Conference or in League Two.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know this for a fact, but if Lincoln and Sutton, say for example, they draw each other and one of them gets through, am I right in saying that this would be the first time that a non-league side has got to the quarterfinals in the FA Cup?
I would probably think so. I haven't got the best of knowledge in that sort of history.
I've not the moment.
That'd be incredible. I think there's been teams that have been in like the old Division 4 or Division 3 that have done that. For definite, but non-league, I don't think there has been in the quarterfinals, which would be a massive achievement, obviously, for one of those two teams, and a great story to share with everyone, like when they're older and whatnot. But yeah, I'd rather get a big team in the fifth round if I was one of those two teams.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to the draw and things like that, is like out of the teams that are left, I said Liverpool 2 weeks ago, and obviously they've had an absolute mare of a week. I'm not a Liverpool fan or anything, but I just thought Liverpool may have gone for one of the cups at least this year. They had a bit of a shocker on the weekend. They lost 2-1 to Championship Wolves, who were struggling in the Championship. Out of the teams that are left, is there any sort of underdogs that you think that would be the team that is probably going to go for it? Like, you know, obviously you've got your Arsenals, you've got your Spurs, you've got United, you've got those big teams like Chelsea and things. Is there any teams like sort of like round mid-table that are left that you think, you know, maybe they'll try extra hard or forget about the league?
I'm not sure, really. I mean, it'd be ideal for Leicester, maybe, because they got a replay against Derby. So Leicester are having a really poor season in the league, great season in the Champions League, but they're not going to qualify for Europe next season unless they probably go for the FA Cup, I would think. So maybe Leicester. Maybe someone else that a little bit higher. I don't actually know the rest of the remaining team. Yeah. Who else is in it?
The one team that stands out for me, just from asking the question and then going, actually, I don't know who's left. I've just looked at the results. I think Burnley are probably that team, because I don't know their history of things, but I don't remember them winning anything, especially in my lifetime, probably in yours as well. I think that'll be the sort of team that might get the furthest, might even get to Wembley, you know, at least a semi-final or something like that. They beat Bristol 2-0 at the weekend. If the draw goes their way, they're in a position in the league where they can, you know, around the fixtures around that tie, the fifth round tie, they're probably the kind of team that can maybe tank it a bit. Whereas compared to, like you say, Leicester are obviously in a massive dogfight now. That's really struggling in the league. I just think that they'll probably forget about the FA Cup because the league's more important. Yeah. But you know, who knows?
Yeah, definitely. Who knows? But if I was going to put money on it, I'd obviously say one of the big teams, Chelsea, United, or Arsenal, probably win it, or even Spurs. If Spurs decide to take it a little bit more seriously, though, Spurs are in a position that where they could go on to win the league and probably do a little bit better in the Europa League. So I don't think Spurs will go for it, but I don't know. Who knows? Because I'd have thought like every manager and every player wants to play as many games as possible throughout the season and try and win as many trophies as they possibly can. That'd be my mentality, but that's, I don't know about those sort of teams. Spurs definitely usually concede. They have done in the past anyway with Europa League. They've put out weaker sides to concentrate on the league. So I don't know. really.
Yeah, I don't know why Spurs don't go for it in the Europa League, because if they, you know, if they win the Europa League, they get automatic, you know, automatic qualification for the Champions League. Not saying that they won't finish outside the top four this season, because more than likely they'll be right up there. But it just, I don't know, it just seems very strange to me as why they don't even bother in it, in all fairness, because I know they were in the Champions League this season and they got knocked out, but you know, it's another trophy, isn't it? It's not exactly a poor European trophy. It's Europa League, and it's still quite a big thing, in all fairness. Like, you know, imagine a Championship team winning it because they won the FA Cup. Is it the FA Cup or League Cup? Was it both?
Yeah, both.
Both. Imagine like a Championship team got through. Like, they'd go for it. So why wouldn't a team like Spurs? Because it's still European competition. It's not as if, you know, it's going to massively affect their title chances or anything like that. Because even though it's a Thursday night, you hear this topic of discussion all the time, Thursday night football, it affects them on the Sunday. The Sunday always seems to be like, oh, they're not any better or anything like that. But a load of rubbish, because... The teams play, like, Champions League teams play on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and then they play on the Saturday or the Sunday. So what's the difference in playing like a Thursday, Sunday, or Thursday, Monday? There's still the same amount of difference in days.
Yeah, that's what I was literally about to say. It's bewildering, really, because it's almost like looking down upon the Europa League like it's a nothing trophy, like it's too good for them or something. And I think that's completely the wrong attitude to have, because really, as a team, you'd want to get into that mentality of winning things and giving your players that taste of glory to then try and exceed those achievements in the bigger tournament, I think. And also it's that experience of going to these different places, because you're not going to play like teams in Spain, Germany, Italy in the Europa League. You're going to tend to play the teams that are in different European countries, and I think getting used to those different atmospheres will benefit you playing in the better countries, almost.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think I'm right in saying this. However, you know, the old European Cup Winners' Cup, is that what the Europa League is now?
I'm unsure. You know, actually, I thought that used to be what the Super Cup is now, where the winners of the Europa League and the Champions League play one another.
I'm not sure. No, I think the Cup Winners' Cup was almost like just a knockout, like what Champions League used to be. At least you just knock out football from round one and you just see yourself the best team. I'm not sure, actually, in all fairness. But, like, if teams... I know this is... We're going back to, like, 70s and 80s and things, and we're going off on a massive tangent from the FA Cup, but, like, because we always do. But, like, how come teams back then... And I know there's not as many... Like, now there's more and more games and things like that to play, but why the teams all of a sudden just not prioritise, like, the FA Cup, the League Cup, basically cup competitions, unless it's the Champions League where they find themselves in the quarterfinal? It just really baffles me. Like you said, if I was a player, or if I was a manager, if I was lucky enough to be a manager, I think that I would want to put my best team out regardless of what competition it is, because I want to try and win them all. Because, you know, like, say for example, you win two trophies in a season, and albeit it's a League Cup and FA Cup, I see that as a really successful season. Like, if you finish, I don't know, top 10 in the league or something, I think that's a good season. Whereas, you know, if you are going all out for the league and then miss out, then what have you got to show for it? It just doesn't seem to make any sense. Like, I would go with the mentality of, right, okay, well, I'm going to win a League Cup, or I'm going to win an FA Cup, because the other teams aren't going for it, and, you know, it's their extra silverware for me.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in agreement with you, mate. I can't really disagree on all that, to be fair. Yeah, it's weird, especially like English clubs as well, because we've kind of, we're a little bit under scrutiny, because there hasn't been a European winner from England for a little bit, probably, I think, since Chelsea won the Champions League a couple of seasons ago, or I think they won the Europa League as well.
Yeah.
The season before or season after, I can't remember.
Season after, yeah.
I think it's like, I don't know, Britain look kind of get like looked down upon by everyone, and everyone thinks, oh, they're not as strong or anything. But I think that's just because the league is so competitive, and I think that's why maybe teams kind of don't really take Europa League as seriously as they maybe should, because there's so much competition within the Premier League, and it's so important to stay in the league and be competitive within the Premier League because of the money. I think that's maybe part of the reason, but I may be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, to like, not that I'm an expert in the league or anything like that, but we'll go back to Spurs. If Spurs won the Europa League, I believe I'm right in saying that they get 30 million for qualifying for the Champions League, or they get 30 million for getting through the group stage. So why? I just don't get why they wouldn't do it. I know they're sort of an established, not maybe a top four team, but they're pushing for that at least, and they're more than likely going to achieve it this season. But it just doesn't seem to add up, especially for like next season, for example, where like it might be United or it might be Liverpool that finish just outside that top four, and they're going to be in the Europa League next season. I can't see them going to win or going out there, you know, going to win those competitions, because they're going to be like, right, well, I want to get in the top four. Why don't they just guarantee themselves by trying the in the Europa League? Like Liverpool did it last season. All right, they lost to Sevilla, who seemed to win it every year. But well, I just don't get why teams don't go for it. It seems to bring down the whole value in the Europa League, in all fairness. And I know it's not as important as the Champions League, but it doesn't seem to add up. Like, even like financially, it would just be beneficial to women in the first place.
Yeah. Well, this season, obviously, United are in the Europa League and they're playing Saint Etienne. So we'll find out if Mourinho is serious about it. I mean, Man United have got a massive squad to use, and obviously, like, Rooney's been like quite a rotational sort of player. So it's not like United are weak and can't afford to not rotate their side and have a good enough side for both the league and the Europa League. And I think it's something that Mourinho's never won that trophy. So I don't see why it can't be a trophy where Mourinho decides, sure, well, I've not won the Europa League, like, I think we should just go for it, because it could be a way into the Champions League almost as a backup if they don't get into the top four. So
like, exactly, say, yeah. And like you mentioned before, they've got such a massive squad. Like, it's not as if United are the only team who've got so much depth. It's just that they seem to have a lot of good players. They don't have, yes, they do have standout players in Zlatan, and you would say Pogba's up there with being that, you know, world-class talent. Obviously, he's not really shown it yet, but he is that kind of player. But they just have a squad of really good players. They don't have like what Chelsea have in like a Costa, then a Hazard, then they have like, we used to have like Oscar, Willian, and they have like loads of players dotted about here, there and everywhere. United just have a good squad. And like, why don't sort of that Liverpool's and the Spurs and things like that, they've got quite a lot of depth in their squad. You know, Liverpool, for example, they've got two or three strikers. Danny Ings hasn't even had a look in. I know he's been injured, but he, you know, is a pretty good player in my opinion. You then, Spurs, you've got Son, who sort of is like that rotational player in a way. They play some games, then he's out for like two or three weeks and then he's back. Like, they've got a big squad as well. So I don't see why they go through the competitions, but we're going to go back and back, back and forth over and over if we carry on about this.
Definitely.
So maybe we should move on. I mean, we would touch on League One and Two, however. We don't really know too much about it, in all fairness, other than that Coventry City are having an absolute mare. And it widens our eyes, especially because of the situation that we're in, but they're in a worse situation than us. I'm not sure if you know anything about their story or anything like that, but it is just a sad, you know, sad sight to see that such a big team, or when you say such a big team, and I know they're not so anymore, but they were an ex-Premier League team, and they used to, you know, sell out every week at Highfield Road when they used to play at their old ground. They could be in League Two next season, like what Portsmouth are now. It's just scary to see.
Yeah, it's definitely not nice. I mean, I don't have an affiliation with Coventry at all, but for a team that was big in the 90s under Gordon Strachan, and had players like Dion Dublin and Darren Huckabee playing for him, Robbie Keane, I think it's awful to see, and it's shocking to see that the FA or the EFL don't do anything about it. They put in these rules of financial fair play to protect teams from going into situations like liquidation and administration, etc. But why do they not stop owners who are basically not funding the football teams that they are owning? And why do they have this fit and proper test that, but then like halfway through they can't redo it because they're clearly lying to their supporters? Like, it just baffles me that they have this fit and proper test before they take over a football club, but they don't have it during one when it's obviously going horribly wrong. And I think Coventry City fans just want their club back. It's the same as us. It's the same with Blackpool and Blackburn and Leyton Orient. It's not nice to see. And I wouldn't wish that even upon like Derby County or Leicester City or whoever, if I didn't like them. I think it's sickening, really.
That's it. I mean, just to touch on the fit and proper thing, just for like any of our 4.5 listeners, I wouldn't say 4.5 listeners, what's that all about? Just for like all of the listeners that do tune in every week and things, what is the fit and proper test and what does it actually do?
I would say the fit and proper test is to see basically if you've got all I can understand it is this, if you've got the bankroll and you've not had any like convictions against you almost. That's what I seem to gather, because Marinakis, I know him going back to Forest, he was meant to take over at Forest, had this fit and proper test and failed that because he'd done some dodgy things whilst being the chairman at Olympiacos, where he's chairman still. So there was that ruling, whereas Fawaz has obviously not got any of that sort of thing against him, but he's passed the fit and proper test because he's got the bankroll and he's not done anything completely illegal, obviously. But what he's doing at our football team, or what he has done for the last four seasons, is inexcusable, which is completely lie to the supporters and just treat us like we're a piece of meat almost.
Yeah. I mean, like, in all fairness, the reason why I asked you is because I didn't know what the fit and proper test is. It just seems it's just a load of, to put it out, a load of bollocks, in all fairness.
It's just a load of words,
yeah,
really.
just to say, oh, yeah, it's almost like the inauguration of Donald Trump. Just like,
yeah,
he's just swearing to a load of shit. With owners and things like that, obviously, we don't want to get too much into it because we talked about it last week, but like you said, it's pretty much, do you have the money? Yes or no? Yes. Right, okay, well, you can take over a club then because you've got the financial capability. Whereas, you know, like, to compare it, for example, Portsmouth are a fan-owned club, but it's taken them like 3.5 years to take over the club or something like that. It's taken them a long time, and it's obviously affected them in such a way that they were a Premier League team, and within 4 or 5 years, they're now a League Two team struggling to get back into League One. I mean, for my standpoint, I am all for like 40% or 49% like foreign owner or owner that isn't associated with the club, and then 51% or more in fan ownership, because then it doesn't allow, well, obviously the fans are the majority then, it doesn't allow for foreign investors to destroy a club in a way, because then the fans would then have the power to sort of say, look, no, we're not going to sack this CEO or we're not going to sack this manager because, well, we're the majority owners. However, to sort of counteract that, you are going to struggle getting investors in then, aren't you? So, I don't want to talk about it anymore, in all fairness, because you're just going to send people to sleep. But, I mean, that would be my standpoint on it. Adam, right, should we talk about Team of the Year or belated Ballon d'Or / that thing? Because obviously we didn't talk about it. I wanted to sort of, like, we left it on a note last week, we were going to talk about it. The reason why I want to talk about it so much is because I generally just think it's just a popularity vote. The reason why I say that is because if you look at the team, you see that there's like Dani Alves in the team, who is at best an average right back. You've got Piqué in there, which in my opinion isn't the best or second best centre half in the world. You've got Marcel at left back, which is, again, he's like Dani Alves. I'd probably say he's an average left back. And then you've got players we've got one player who is a has-been, in all fairness. I don't think Iniesta is as good as he was. I know you've got Toni Kroos, which I'm not saying he's a has-been or anything like that, but I just don't think he's one of the best midfielders in the world. I mean, looking at that team, are there any positions that you go, right, okay, I'd have him instead? Or, like, I've mentioned already that I don't like Dani Alves and I like PK. So, like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, oh well, I don't even like Sergio Ramos, but I have to admit, he's a good centre-half. He's an absolute see you next Tuesday. But like I said, he's good. I mean, Neuer is a good goalkeeper, don't get me wrong, but I think he's a world-class goalkeeper that has a lot can have a lot of mistakes in him. I think if he came to the Premier League, he'd get found out a little bit. A bit like Claudio Bravo has done, where you get players that will punish you or put the pressure on you, and there will be something that happens and he'll get scrutinised for it massively by the media, especially by people like Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville, because it happened to De Gea and it's happening to Bravo now. And obviously, ultimately, De Gea has gone on to be probably the best goalkeeper in the Premier League, along with probably Hugo Lloris and Courtois. So Neuer's a bit of a grey area for me. I think right back and the other centre-half are really difficult, because I think you've probably got Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels, who are very, very good. And obviously, they won the Euros. No, they didn't win the Euros. What man? That's Portugal. But Portugal, I mean, you wouldn't even say one of their players is world-class to play centre-half.
Argument, I'd probably say Pepe had a brilliant year. He won the Champions League like Ronaldo did, and he also won the Euros as well. I'd say he had a better year than Piqué. But I would probably go with like a Boateng or maybe a Hummels. I wouldn't say Hummels so much, but I would still say he had a better year than Piqué, in all fairness. At right back, I mean, in all fairness, full back position is quite a difficult position. You know, I can't get my words out. it's such a tough position to sort of say he's world class, because, like, Jamie Carragher said a few years ago, you're either a failed winger or a centre half, and I'd agree with that to a certain extent, because you get a full back that looks like a centre half, and then you get a full back that looks like a winger. You don't get that he's a proper full back. Like, it doesn't seem to make sense. The only player that I would say that has ever mastered that position, or not mastered it in a way, but just looks like a proper full back, is Philipp Lahm, and I would have gone with him again this year. Not you didn't like have a great year or anything like that, but I just think he is the typical fullback that you'd have.
Yeah, well, I think even you'd put Gary Neville within that category, because even though he said he had played centre half and he was a failed centre half, I kind of think he fits the mould as well, which is a weird thing to say in a sense. But I think there hasn't been, like, I would agree with you, in Philipp Lahm is probably the best right back I've seen over a 10-year period, but I don't think there's been as good a right back as Cafu, probably.
Yeah, and again, he was, in all fairness, probably a failed winger, because he probably didn't have like the dribbling ability. Like, looking at him as a player, he was an absolute tank and he was a beast. But he was so good as a fullback because he could bomb up and down the wing all the time. Whereas, you know, you probably couldn't see him taking on a left back, you know, time after time after time. You could probably just see him as an overlapper or something like that. So yeah, to sort of to finish off the back four, I'd probably say I'd go with Lahm again, even though, like I said, he didn't have a brilliant year. However, I just don't think Dani Alves did either, in all fairness. What did he really do? Not a lot. At left back, I would go with Alaba over Marcelo. I just think he's a better player anyway, whether he had a better year or not. Again, to be opinionated. And then with yourself, like you're saying, De Gea, I'd probably take De Gea over Neuer, in all fairness. I think he's a better goalkeeper, however, you know, that could be argued. And then at centre-half,
you'd say Pepe or Boateng.
I'd say Pepe or Boateng. I just don't think PK, in all fairness, didn't do anything all year. Moving on to midfield. This one, for me, there's two positions there where I'd just be like, absolutely no way that they should have got in. Modric is a lock. He's, in all fairness, probably the best midfielder out there at the minute, in terms of, you know, him being able to get forward, get back, just having that. He's the complete overall player at the minute. He's almost like what a Lampard was, where, you know, he was good at everything. Whereas Modric is just like a mini version of him because he's tiny. In all fairness, he's like 5'9" or 5'10". There's nothing of him, and he's just a brilliant player. The other two positions you got Iniesta, you got Cruz. In my opinion, I think Pogba had a better year than either of those, and yeah. I'd even say Kante had a better year than those two.
Yeah, I was literally about to say Kante. I mean, playing in a Leicester City side that won the Premier League and is now playing for Chelsea and doing exactly the same thing. And I think he had a good Euros, Kante did. I'm pretty sure I saw a game with France and they didn't play him, and France looked like a completely different side without him in the team as a ball winner. So yeah, I'd agree with you. I think those two players are better than Kroos and probably Iniesta were last season, because Pogba obviously did brilliantly in the Champions League as well with Juventus. Is obviously now the world's most expensive player, which I don't agree with that. He's the world's most expensive player. It's just what happened and the market. We don't need to get into it, but I would agree with you.
Yeah,
both those positions. And I think the front three. What is it? I take it it's Messi, Suarez, and Ronaldo.
Yeah, I think
it's just like
that's not, a lot. There's no
competition really. No,
I mean the only player really that kind of missed, well, there's two players in my opinion that missed out in the four positions. However, I just agree with those decisions. I'd probably say Antoine Griezmann had a good year.
Yeah,
had a really good Euros as well. I think he finished top goal scorer. And Neymar as well.
Yeah, and I'd even go for Lewandowski on the bench, because
yeah.
I think he had the best season that a Bayern Munich striker has had in years or something daft. And
yeah,
I think
he finished on like 50-odd goals. Say, yeah.
I'm a bit biased because my family's Polish. I watched Poland obviously throughout the Euro qualification and in the actual tournament. And to say that Poland aren't the best side, really, I think Lewandowski led by example for him in some respects. And I think he's just a very good all-round striker.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have the greatest Euros. People were tipping him to be top goal scorer, and I think he only scored one or maybe two goals.
And
then there's Milik as well, isn't it, up front?
Oh, he couldn't hit a barn door,
and he couldn't hit a barn door, but like he got, like they were both deemed to be like, oh, you're right, okay, they're going to have really good Euros. They're going to carry Poland to probably a quarterfinal, maybe even a semis. And obviously the I think in all fairness, I had Poland to get quite far, and they didn't really live up to it in all fairness. But like, is there any other players anywhere at all that you thought, oh, they had a good year and maybe they should have a shout? Like, you know, like you said, that the Leicester team, not saying that the Leicester back four should, any of them should go anywhere near the defensive positions, but like I think Christian Fuchs had a really good year. However, you know, it was only for that first five months of the year, so does it really count? And then again, for maybe like a Wes Morgan, these would never get in the team of the year.
No, and even Vardy or Mahrez.
Exactly.
As well.
Going back to my point is, I think it's just a popularity vote. Would you have ever saw a Leicester City player getting in that team?
Apart from Kante, no.
No. I honestly think the reason why Kante didn't get in is because he plays for Leicester. Because he played for Leicester. I honestly don't think... if he was at Chelsea and he had the same year, he probably would have got in all fairness. But I just do think it's a popularity vote. You look at the 11 there, they're Barcelona and Real Madrid, and then you've got Bayern Munich, and then now Juventus, which used to play for Barcelona. It just seems to be the same every single year. Like, you go back to the last year's team, instead of Pique, it was Thiago Silva, and I think instead of Cruz, it was Pogba then. But even then, it's still majorly La Liga team. But we're going to move over that because, like, that happened nearly a month ago. The only reason we're really here to talk about that is because we want to talk about our best 11, right?
Yes. Are we going to go? Do you want to go for? We both say our like formations, and then a player in each position, or like, so like I'll say goalkeeper, you say goalkeeper, and then our defenders.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I believe you've gone for, what was it, 3-5-2 or something like that?
I've gone for a 3-4-3. Absolutely bombing out with I'm just going goals galore.
Yeah, I've gone for a 4-3-3, bit of stability in the middle. However, my front three, well, not my front three, my middle three aren't really defensive at any point in that. So, in all fairness, mine's pretty much all guns blazing. But we'll start with the goalkeeper. So, who have you got?
I've gone for David De Gea.
You've gone for David De Gea.
And this is because of he came to the Premier League as a young boy, and now he's emerged as a man. The guy is an unbelievable goalkeeper, but he's also an unbelievable, almost an outfielder, a sweeper keeper, because his passing is unbelievable. Like, I've never seen a goalkeeper with better passing than David De Gea.
No, I probably can agree with that. To think of anyone,
I think Lloris maybe.
Lloris is pretty good. I think Casillas was pretty good in his day as well. But like back then, it wasn't so much like the keeper needed to have good good kicking skills or good passing skills. So yeah, I probably agree with you on that. The only reason I didn't go for De Gea is because I just don't think he's done it for long enough.
Right.
It's maybe his fourth really good year. I've gone for Buffon only because of his longevity.
I thought you might have said Buffon. Buffon's obviously unbelievable.
Yeah, of course. He's an absolute legend in the game, and he's still easily a top 10 goalkeeper.
Yeah. What's your back four?
My back four. I've kind of cheated in a way because I've gone for an ex right back at right back, because like I mentioned before, right back's such a hard position to sort of go for. And I won't go for Lam. The only reason is because I just think there's four better defenders than him. I've gone for Ramos at right back because, like you say, he used to play at right back.
He used to play there for Seville, didn't he?
He used to play there for Seville, and I think he started out at Real Madrid there as well.
Right.
A centre half, I've gone for Puyol, and I've gone for Maldini, and then at left back, I've gone for Roberto Carlos.
All right, you're right. Nice.
So, like I mentioned, I cheated in a way because Roberto Carlos was towards, I was like six, maybe seven when he retired, but I do remember him playing. believe it or not, Maldini. I mean, I'd be surprised if he's not in your team. In all fairness, I mean,
Maldini was more of a left back than a centre half.
Yeah,
so
like he
played there.
Yeah, they used to play a back three, and I just thought, right, I'm going to play at centre half. Why not? I mean, he could play at centre half. He could play at left back, and it probably the same for Carlos. He'd probably do a job at centre half. And with Puyol, I just think during that dominant era with Barcelona, he was the standout centre half for me. He was brilliant. Even in his younger days, when there was like, well, I'm giving one another player away, but when like Eto'o, Henry, Ronaldinho, those types of players were there, Barcelona weren't really the defensive team. But like when they really needed a defender, or when they needed someone to do them a job, like last minute, he was always there.
I was literally about to say that. I think out of majority of Barcelona defenders that I've seen, I think Puyol could have played in the Premier League.
Definitely.
I think he was that good.
He was that good. I mean, towards the end of his career, he kind of got found out a little bit, but that was because he was so old. I think he was like 30, maybe 37 when he retired. I'm not sure of being accurate.
Neither am I.
Yeah, but he was pretty old when he retired, and he was still pretty good. What's your back?
My back three is, I think it's quite surprising, in all honesty, but I've gone for Chiellini, Rio Ferdinand, and Alessandro Nesta.
Okay.
Nesta was unreal for AC Milan when they were pretty dominant in Italian football, and I think the year after they played Liverpool in that absolutely mental Champions League final,
yes,
Nesta was so good. And then obviously Chiellini's doing that now for Juventus in Italy and is unbelievable. And because of my crazy formation, I thought I'd put Ferdinand in because he was a pacey England defender, and I thought he can pass a ball, he plays the game well, he's intelligent, and a lot of people surprisingly actually say Rio Ferdinand's one of the hardest players they've played against.
Yeah.
And I just think because of the rest of the team I've chosen, I kind of gone for a bit more flair.
Yeah.
From centre half with two guys who are a bit more brutal in Chiellini and Nesta.
Yeah, Chiellini and Nesta, for me, they were probably the two players that I could have put in. I did have Nesta down originally. I didn't actually think of Chiellini, but he has been a good player. Another player I could have mentioned is Cannavaro, who was Chiellini's defensive partner in the 06 World Cup. But yeah, I'm not that surprised, but I would have. Ferdinand for me is a bit of a, not like a dodgy one, but you've explained the reason why, because obviously you've got a weird formation going on. But in midfield, for me, I've gone for Iniesta, I've gone for Zidane, and I've gone for Ronaldinho. The reason I've gone for it, you can think of Ronaldinho, he did win the Ballon d'Or, I think it was three times. And at some, like, at maybe the 2004-2007 sort of time, he was unstoppable. He was so, so good to watch. Like, I remember that. I remember the game against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Like, it just seems to flash in my mind, that goal where he, like, literally just, like played with, I think it was Terry, and I can't remember the other centre-half, Carvalho, I think it was. And he just slots it in the bottom corner. You just think,
that zero backlift.
That's the one, man. He just literally just like steps like inside, outside, and it just like literally, it almost like toe pokes it in the back in the back of the net. And it's just like, wow.
I remember like Ronaldinho, just before he went to Barcelona from PSG, he was ridiculously close to signing for United. And I used to quite like, I still quite like United now in the Premier League to watch, especially under Ferguson. And I was like, if Ronaldinho comes to the Premier League, it would literally be amazing.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, went to Barcelona and the rest is history.
Yeah.
But I love Ronaldinho. I just think he's such a happy guy as well.
That's right. He is like the forefront for like what a player should be, in terms of he just appreciates that he's like being, he's so gifted in a way, in terms of like he's been given this opportunity to play football. Whereas so many, like we mention it all the time, so many other players just take it for granted, and he's just that standpoint for like, I appreciate every second I get on the pitch. And he even still plays now. I think he's like coming out of retirement to play again.
He was 40. Offering to play for Chapanese of their disaster.
Yeah. The other two positions, I've gone for Zidane. I think that's a lock. I'd be surprised if you haven't got him. I mean, if you haven't, I'm going to like end the podcast now. But the other position, Iniesta. I've gone for Iniesta because I could have gone for Xavi as well. He was one of the two players that just kept, you know, Barcelona ticking over in terms of just like the possession play, especially in like the 08 maybe to 12 era, and even for his country as well. He won the Euros, I think, he won it twice in the 2012
World Cup,
and in the World Cup in 2010, and scored the winner. He's got to be a lock for me, you know, even further down the line, his greatest ever centre mid, or one of them at least. And then Zidane, for me, a total lock. He's my idol, in all fairness. Just watching him play, he was so elegant, couldn't get the ball off him. He's what a Pogba, he's like a modern day Pogba, in all fairness. Pogba's like a modern day Zidane. Is that like, you just, he's so good to watch in terms of his technical ability, his ability to just smash in a 30-yard bomb. And it's just like, he was so good. And that Champions League goal, I mean, I wasn't really old enough to see that goal, but looking at it back, it was just sick.
Yeah, I remember seeing that one against Leverkusen. That's like, literally, it was a ridiculous volley. It's just a shame how Zidane all like, kind of finished it all with the headbutt. But what a moment.
Yeah, what a moment. Like, what a moment. Right, I'm going, boom, see you later. Like, I don't remember him from that, in all fairness, but it does stand out as like Champions League final, World Cup final, and he just goes and ruins it all. Like, it not ruins his career, because in all fairness, he's already won the World Cup, but just like you say, what a way to go. What's your mid four?
So this is why I chose the back three. Anyway, I've got I had a choice between Clarence Seedorf and Claude Makélélé, and I thought Clarence Seedorf is too box to box.
Okay.
So Claude Makélélé would sit just in front of the three.
Okay.
Because he's an absolute beast. Like, you name, like, defensive midfield in the football dictionary, Claude Makélélé's face is next to that.
Yeah.
Because the guy was unreal. Like, I remember watching him, not for Real Madrid, but for Chelsea, and I just thought, he's amazing. Like, because I think the two seasons where Mourinho first came in and they won the Premier League twice, I think he was a massive unsung hero for Chelsea.
Well, he allowed Lampard and Deco, because he was a bit after, but he allowed, especially Lampard, the license to get forward and score so many goals. And yeah, for me, I probably, you know, to pick a center, like a proper defensive midfielder, either him or maybe Gattuso. Maybe even a Petit.
Yeah, maybe. Just to please you, I have put Zidane in.
Yes.
And I've put a player next to who he wish he'd played with, because he said he was one of the best players he played against, and I think
Scholes
probably my favorite England player of all time. I think Paul Scholes, because I just think like Paul Scholes could not tackle for shit, and I can't. I'm awful at tackling, like, and I kind of almost sympathize with Paul Scholes because I'm in the same boat. I just wish I was as good at passing and as intelligent as he is on a football pitch, because he was unreal. And I mean, in the early years when he played for United, he was actually meant to be a striker or a second striker, and he scored quite a lot of goals, but it just shows how good of a footballer he is, because he dropped deeper and deeper and deeper and was still unplayable. Like, the guy could pass right foot, left foot, scored some unbelievable goals, went about his business, was probably one of the quietest players off the pitch in terms of media, barely spoke, did interviews, I don't think, and was just unbelievable. And I think him winning the Champions League with United, and I think it was it 2008, 2009? Because I think he missed the 99 final.
He missed the 99 final, yeah, because he had to take a professional foul, didn't he, against, was it Juve?
I think it was Juventus, yeah.
And do you know what, like, going back to this, because I got a load of shit off my friends for this, when I said this, like, Stade Dele Alli a few weeks ago, I was really close. I was one letter out. It was Stade Dele Alpi.
Right.
That's where they played. That's, like, I just need to get off my chest. So, okay, you can carry on now.
And I just think, like, with Scholes, I think England wasted him completely towards the end of the 90s by playing him, like, left wing or whatever. Him or Gerrard left midfield. And I think if England had learnt to adapt formations, I think Paul Scholes could have been much better player for England. But moving on, so Zidane we've already spoke about, and I've gone for Ronaldinho because just pure genius, isn't he?
Yeah.
I have to refer back to Ronaldinho. The goal he scored against Real Madrid where he ran past like half the team.
I think
Real Madrid fans,
he did it twice.
Him. Yeah. He
did it twice in the same game. And yeah, like you say, even the Madrid fans just got up and applauded. And you just think, I think he's one of only two players to ever do that. Like, literally get the player, your opposition fans in an El Clasico on their feet. I'm not sure the other player was, but I've just heard that somewhere. For me, like, in my opinion, maybe the third greatest ever player. Only because of that sort of period in his career where he was literally, there was no one anywhere near him. I mean, there were so many good players. Like, most of these players that we've mentioned have played in that era, and he was just way above everyone else.
Onto your front three, I wouldn't be surprised if you've at least got two out of the same three of me.
I mean, in all fairness, I've gone for the two wingers, being Ronaldo and Messi.
Yeah,
I presume that's the same as you. And then up front, I've gone for Ronaldo.
Fat Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Oh, you got the exact same three as me,
mate. There's not even a competition for striker. He is the greatest ever striker I've ever seen.
This is the thing. Me and Danny used to love watching YouTube videos when we was in school, and we'd always watch Ronaldo, and we just thought, do you know, if he didn't get that cruciate knee injury, how many goals would he scored? Like, we looked at his stats, and like for Inter Milan, he was scoring like nearly a goal every game, which hasn't happened really until recently with like
Ronaldo.
Suarez, Ronaldo and Messi. The guy was a beast.
Yeah, it's like, just to be that good, even through the injuries and, you know, after that, him putting weight on. I know, like, he was in, how long was he good for? Like 97 to about 04, maybe 05. Up to 06 World Cup.
Bad injuries, and he's got, like, I think he's got, like, a thyroid problem, which makes him put on all that weight.
Yes.
That's why he's fat Ronaldo.
Like, he was
an unbelievable player,
so good. And then obviously the other two players. That's why I'm saying Ronaldinho probably the third greatest ever player. Ronaldo and Messi for me the two greatest.
Yeah, I think like, it's weird because I've watched Messi play live, and he wasn't that good when I went to go watch him, which I was a little bit disappointed about. But luckily Neymar was playing and stole the show and was just unreal.
Yeah,
And I think he would probably be on this team maybe 10 years down the line. Neymar would probably be in competition with Ronaldo and Messi. I just think Messi, like, I don't know, he kind of like struts about, doesn't really look interested until the ball gets within like a within his radius, yeah, and then he suddenly just comes alive.
Yeah,
and he's ridiculous.
He just replicates Ronaldinho in that sort of sense. As you never saw Ronaldinho defending or anything like that, or like getting back or anything like that. But as soon as the ball was within 10 meters of him, that was it. He was on the end of something. He was going to score a goal. He was going to at least nutmeg a player or something like that. I think Neymar's that sort of player now. Obviously, that front three, we've got exactly the same. Is there any other players in there that they just miss out? Any players that, like, just because of their name miss out? The reason why I say that is because I think Alan Shearer could maybe be in that that topic of conversation.
I think there's quite a few. Like, I'd say, yeah, Alan Shearer, Thierry Henry, Van Nistelrooy.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Del Piero. There's a lot of good players. I mean, we didn't even put really any German players, and I'd say even Michael Ballack for midfield is pretty good. Obviously, I like Marco Reus and Götze and players like that.
I like those types of players like Reus and Götze. I don't think Götze would be anywhere near this team, but I think Reus, if he comes back for the next World Cup and he wins the World Cup, he could be in that conversation. Maybe not as a forward, but
You've got players now that are playing like Pogba, who is still quite young, so he's still probably got time to have an even bigger legacy than he's already got right now, because obviously he's the most expensive player. And then even like Bale, Suarez, Modric, obviously there's a lot of good players.
That's right.
Didn't even get on the list.
There's too many good players. I mean, like, even other players, you've got like Vieira, you've got Giggs, Ryan Giggs, for me, if Ronaldo and Messi haven't turned up, he's in that forward three. Maybe even like a Pires as well. These players are so good, however, it's just literally Ronaldo and Messi have stole the show for me. Any other names that we haven't mentioned?
I mean, we said at right back, like Cafu. I mean, he missed out, obviously, for me. If I'd gone to a four, Cafu would have been at right back for me.
Yeah. I was a bit too young.
I mean, Bergkamp as well, I thought was a really good player.
He was a genius.
I didn't get to see them that much, but towards the end of their career, like Stuart Pearce at left back, obviously. And even if Michael Owen didn't have the injuries he had,
what a player he could have been.
He could have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Gerrard obviously missed out.
Yeah, Gerrard, Lampard. Literally Xavi. Most of England's golden era for me. Well, all of them have missed out for me. It's actually not even an English player in it.
Yeah, I mean, if we was taking this back even further, you definitely get an English player in, like Bobby Moore or Bobby Charlton or
Shilton. Yeah.
That would be pretty easy. But I think now there hasn't been a world class England player, I'd say, since an early Wayne Rooney.
Yeah,
because he's kind of faded, because he's been played here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah,
but, like maybe Gazza, probably, or Shearer. Yeah. Like, or Shearer. And I think if Shearer had gone to a better club than Newcastle, no offense to Newcastle,
he would have been Newcastle in the list, fans probably. Losing,
yeah, he could have scored more goals than he did for Newcastle, but that just shows how good he was.
Yeah, just to sort of finish up on this, like, in my opinion, like, you've mentioned all these names like Gascoigne, Lineker, all these players. He, looking at my list still, I can't seem to find a position anywhere for them. Mm. Which kind of speaks morals for England in the last, maybe, well, since 70s, really. It just seems as if, like, we always, well, the British press always talk about England, like, especially get to Euros, like, oh, they're going to win the World Cup, or they're going to win the Euros, or anything, whatever. It just always seems like they kind of miss out that, like, look at the players that have won it, and look at just look at my best 11, basically. Like, none of them get anywhere near it. I mean, like you said, the only player really who gets close to it is probably Rooney in the last 10, 15 years before that Gascoigne.
I've got Scholes in there, but Scholes doesn't really play like an English player. He's more like a continental player, in my opinion.
He hardly ever played for England, really, did he? I think he was about 40, 50 appearances.
maybe. Just like as a final roundup, who's your manager?
The reason I've gone for this manager is because I know who you've already gone for, and I just want to go someone different. I went for Ancelotti.
Okay.
But I do think Ancelotti's got a viable case. In all fairness, he won Champions League as a player and a manager, because I learned from that question the other week. But he's won the Champions League, was it 3 or 4 times?
He's
managed the best clubs. And he's just an ever-present legend as a manager, really. I know, like, you've gone for Ferguson, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, yeah, he's the greatest manager to ever grace the game, but I just thought I went for Ancelotti.
I wouldn't even say maybe Ferguson's the greatest manager to ever grace the game. I think it's just that the longevity that he did it in. He built teams like so many times for United, and he was successful at it, and he was successful at making average players good. So, like, I mean, would you ever thought that Ji-Sung Park would ever be a Champions League winner or whatever? I'm not sure if he came at that time, but Ji-Sung Park was really a important player for Ferguson, and people like Darren Fletcher and John O'Shea and Wes Brown and people that, and like even Nicky Butt, like, and Phil Neville. Yeah. They're not really that great of players. They're not world class. Like, I think United haven't really had that many world class players in their teams. They've just got really good manager in Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have even argued that Dwight Yorke and Andy Cole should have been like way better than, well, not even, they were good strikers, obviously, scored a lot of goals. But like, they wouldn't get into your World 11.
No, they wouldn't even get you to like your Premier League 11, really. I mean, a couple of them might, but like you said, like a Nicky Butt or like a Darren Fletcher or John O'Shea, they're not going to get anywhere near your best ever Premier League 11. Or like, well, and look how many titles they won. You know, United have won how many Premier League titles? Is it like 14 in the 20 odd years?
Yeah, and they won 20 altogether.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But like you said, their manager just had a great knack of giving them a will to win. You know, you look at the teams that they had to beat. Well, the team they had to beat in the Champions League final in 2008, and obviously in a Chelsea side that was really good at the time. And then back in 1999, when they had to beat a Bayern Munich team, which was, well, better than them in all fairness. And obviously it was a bit of a miracle them scoring 2 goals last minute. But like you said, there's no way that a manager can be so ever-present like that again. I mean, obviously we've got Wenger, but Wenger's got nowhere near in terms of titles and things like that. And, you know, even when it's all said and done, like Mourinho or even like an Ancelotti, I don't think they're going to get anywhere near the amount of titles that Ferguson has won.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Ferguson as well, you've got to say, look at the players that he's managed over the years, and like the ego. So obviously Ronaldo and Rooney and Van Nistelrooy, Beckham. You've got to really give him a lot of credit and how good he is. Obviously Ancelotti's managed a lot of very good players, and he's managed Ronaldo, and I think he's managed Ibrahimovic and a couple of, and obviously massive players at AC Milan in his time. So I think overall they probably actually even themselves out. I think it's because the Premier League is so exposed to us, that's why I think you almost in favour of Ferguson rather than a foreign manager.
Yeah, I like, you can sort of say that. However, I do generally agree with, you know, Sir Alex being that manager, and in all fairness, to win so many domestic league titles, and obviously it being a top 5 division, not saying in the 90s it was the best league, it might have been the Italian league at the time. And in the last sort of, well, before maybe 13 era, it's probably La Liga in terms of the competitiveness in terms of the two best teams or the best team. I do just think, you know, I'm in total agreement with you. I just thought I'd go for Ancelotti as an argument. But yeah, Ancelotti has won a lot. He might still win more because he's always seems to be at a big club. Whereas I think, like you said, Alex always had to build teams, and like the last time he built a team, obviously just before he left, he just went out and bought one of the best strikers in the world in Van Persie and just spent 30 million, that was it, and then he won another league title out of it. It's crazy, isn't it? We'll move on. We've got a couple of little things to talk about. We've got the quiz questions coming up as well. Can't wait. But before that, we've got transfers, because there has been more than one transfer this week, believe it or not.
I know, it's amazing.
The biggest one, obviously, is Pai finally pissing off.
Rejoining.
Rejoining
Marseille.
For 25 million. Probably a good price tag for both clubs. I think
I don't remember how much West Ham bought him originally, but
this is about 13 mil, so they've made profit.
I just feel sorry for West Ham fans, because they saw a player that was probably playing beyond what he's played in his life. Obviously, because if Payet was that good for Marseille, he would have moved years ago to the Premier League or to the Spanish League or wherever, or a bigger team in France. But I just feel sorry for West Ham in how it happened and how the transfers happened, because Payet has really like let them down professionally, and someone that they obviously grew to love last year. I just feel sorry for him a little bit, but happy that they got a good price for him.
Yeah, like I said, I think for both clubs it's probably a good thing, because obviously Payet wants to leave. However, Marseille, in all fairness, based on last season, they've got him for a good price. But yeah, like you said, he would have moved years ago if he was really, really that good. And he's obviously not shown it until last year, obviously in the most sort of broadcast league in the world. He could, like, based on what he did last season, he could have played for easily a top four side, even like a Madrid maybe would have been after him. Well, they were at one point. And even like a Barcelona or something like that, he really could have played for that big team, but decided obviously to stay and then all of a sudden wanted to go. But it happens, isn't it? It happens all the time now, and it's kind of sad, really. The other sort of, not big news, because we talk about it every week, but the Chinese league are back. They're after Rooney this time.
I read that Mrs. Rooney has gave him permission
to go ahead,
which I would be very surprised if Rooney does go ahead, but I wouldn't at the same time, because the money's ridiculous. He's not playing every week for Man United. He's now broke the record. Maybe he would go to China just to secure his future, his life, even that much better. Not like he would need to go to China to do that, because he's probably on like a quarter of a mil at United anyway.
Yeah,
but obviously the money is crazy, and even if he went just for 1 year, he'd be sorted.
Exactly. I in that kind of respect, I don't blame him. The guy's at the end of his career. He's done everything he needs to do, you know, in terms of domestically. Obviously, he's not really achieved it at England level, however, who has in the last 40 years. I'm like, the only place you can sort of see him going to is either the MLS or China, and I don't blame him. Like, you know, most players, MLS used to be that league, and now it's, you know, now it seems to be China all of a sudden. But yeah,
if I was Wayne Rooney, I'd be going back to Everton, personally.
I can't see him going there, you know.
Maybe not, but I'd be very, like I said, I'd be very surprised if he goes, and I won't be surprised if he doesn't, because I think Wayne Rooney still would probably like to play in the Premier League. But that's obviously, it's probably happening in the next few weeks, I suppose, or the next few days. Obviously, we're not far from January transfer closing.
Yeah, I can't see him going yet. If he's to go, he'll probably see out his contract and then go that way. I can't see him being bought out or anything like that. Moving on, Robert Snodgrass has moved to West Ham, which is more than likely secured Hull's relegation. But having said that, West Ham seems to be active, very active,
very active. They've got Jose Font as well, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Southampton. So two really good signings, in my honest opinion. I think Snodgrass was having a really good season for Hull at the moment, and Hull sold Jake Livermore, I think, to West Brom as well, or someone like that, for 10 million. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see Hull make a few panic signings in the next couple of days.
Yeah, they might go out and spend 20 to 30 million maybe in the last couple of days. However, they've got, well, they don't want their owners either, so maybe not. Who knows? they barely had 14 players at the start of the season. So
yeah, which is crazy that they've sold two of their better players now.
Yeah, it's a bit of a disappointing one, that, in all fairness, but they shouldn't have sat Steve Bruce in the first place. Patrick Van Aanholt has gone to Palace for 40 million, which I don't see that being... Well, I mean, they do need a left-back, in all fairness, because I think Patrick Suarez? Yeah. He's out for the season. They had a car accident a few months ago, something like that, so he's indefinitely out, but 40 million for an average left-back.
Patrick Van Aanholt's definitely a failed winger. The amount of goals he scores from left-back. He's in the penalty spot every time I see him score.
Yeah. That doesn't look like a Sam Allardyce signing, though, in all fairness. Like,
no.
It just seems a bit weird, that one, because for me, if he was to go out and sign anyone, I'm not going to mention a player, but if he was to go out and sign someone, he's going to be defensive and probably like 7 foot or something like that, because that's what Sam Allardyce does.
He'd sign like an Andy Carroll up front or something as well.
Imagine if he goes last day. Oh my God.
I can't imagine it, because obviously he's playing really well for West Ham, but I don't know if there's been any more transfers other than those few, really.
Not really. I mean, Villa are another team that are really active in Championship. They've signed quite a lot of players in the last week.
I mean, they've signed probably the best midfielder. I've been banging on about Conor Hourihan for weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's scoring goals from midfield and setting up a hell of a lot. And I think him sitting next to, obviously, our old boy, Henry Lansbury, is going to be very beneficial for Aston.
They're another squad that have got a lot of depth as well. They've got like Jedinak, Gary Gardner. They've got so many good players in that midfield position, and they've got like a Doma on the wing. They've got Jack Grealish, the young lad, and even up front they're after, like I said, Jordan Rhodes. They've got Ross McCormack. I mean, and they don't want to get rid of him.
I mean, at least Villa have loaned a player to our beloved Nottingham Forest in Tishy Bowler today, so that's not too bad. I mean, luckily, I'm not going to be there for the Villa game against Forest at the City Ground. I'm a bit disappointed because obviously it's a massive, massive game between two big historic clubs, and I'd love to see Henry Lansbury come back and get absolutely nailed by like Osborne or something, or Cash. But I think we're going to probably lose that game. But would you like to do the quiz?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, let's go ahead. I'm up for it.
Right, I've separated a load of questions into piles, so you can either go up, down, left or right, and then they're numbered 1 to 6 and you can pick a number as well.
Oh, so I just pick numbers then?
But I've separated all these questions into piles, so it's a bit more random. So
wow, okay.
Up, left, down or right.
So I just pick one number, up, down, left, well, up, down, left, right. I'll go left because I'm left-handed.
Yeah, and a number between 1 and 6?
6.
Oh, this is an easy one for you, mate. What is the name of AC Milan's stadium?
God, it's just actually left my mind for a second. San Siro, there you go. It's like, oh my God, I'm going to get it wrong.
Right.
San Siro.
Up, left, down or right?
I'll go left again, I'll go 4.
Whoa. Who became the first player to win the European Footballer of the Year award 3 times? Although this is a bit outdated, so
this would be Van Basten.
No, but close. Same nationality.
Same nationality, Dutch. Hullet.
No.
Oh shit.
Played for Barcelona.
Played for Barcelona. Okay.
Managed Barcelona as well.
Rijkaard.
Nah.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Johan Cruyff.
Cruyff. Oh my! Damn it. Rest in peace. I wouldn't have got that. I mean, give me another 1,000 guesses, I might have. Down.
What number?
3.
Which player has made the most league appearances ever for Liverpool?
Most league appearances?
I don't think you'll get this. I've never even heard of him.
Never heard of him?
No.
So you don't, like, if I asked for a clue, you wouldn't be able to give me one?
No.
You can't even like get the ear or anything.
No.
Oh, should we just have another one then? Because I'm not going to
have another one off this card. What number?
Who was it though?
A man called Ian Callaghan.
No, I don't know who that was. He probably won four Champions Leagues or something like that. We just don't know who it was. go down again. I'll go for number one.
Go down.
So number three still. Number question three.
Question three. Which major European club is named after a hero of Greek mythology?
Hero of Greek mythology. What's the... Does it tell you what it is? Or
what? What do you mean?
Greek mythology.
Yeah, like a hero. So like Achilles or Hercules or whatever.
So I was going to say Hercules then, because there's a team called Hercules.
No, not them.
Oh my God. I don't know anything about Greek mythology. That's so poor, isn't it?
I'll give you a clue. They're Dutch.
They're Dutch. Really doesn't help.
Massive Dutch club.
Ajax?
Yeah.
All right. The only reason I say Ajax is it just seems like the... Ajax trees down or something, I don't know.
Well,
like,
Ajax is the hero.
Ajax.
So,
okay, yeah. Right, fine. Right.
Last question.
Two more, mate.
Right. Two more.
Yeah, two more. Right, number five.
Number five. What is Man United's official nickname?
The Red Devils.
Yeah.
And I'll go right again. I'll go number one, if I've not already done it.
For which country... Oh, does Craig Bellamy play his international
football? Oh, who's that? Well, he used to play for Wales. I know he plays for now.
Yeah, Wales.
Wales. Right.
That's the end of the quiz. Woo!
Right, and also that's the end of the podcast. Thanks to everyone who listened last week. Unfortunately, I don't know how many people listened because we've gone from Podomatic to iTunes now. And thanks for that guy on Twitter who heckled me by saying, oh, isn't it supposed to be the other way around? Isn't it supposed to be TFTT? Yeah, it is. We know. You just can't change it on the template. So it'll be like that until it changes, I guess. But yeah, thanks very much for listening. Be sure, obviously, to share it. And again, if your pet reptile hasn't listened to it yet, then please get him to listen to it because we need that extra listener, right? And obviously, if there's any... We'll talk about the best ever 11. If you got any players that you think that we should have got in, bearing in mind that I'm not even 20 and I don't know how old Adam is. I think he's about 45, aren't you, Adam? Something like that.
No.
But bearing in mind, in the last maybe 10 or 15 years, if any players that you think you missed him out, then please give us a shout.
Yes, definitely. In the Premier League and the Championship. We'll be in all its glory next week, so we'll be talking about that, I guess.
Yeah, we'll be back to full flow chatting absolute shit.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us, guys. See you soon.